On today's show, we're featuring Tim Dekker, a research strategy and design specialist hailing from the Netherlands. We get into a very interesting project he took on for the Taka Wearable. It was all about helping refugee children and their families with a proof of concept bracelet to basically manage stress levels. We also talked about Lego Serious Play and what he has on tap in the future. Really interesting conversation. Hope you enjoy it.
So Tim, originally when I reached out to you, I had come across your article called Lessons Learned on Designing for Kids. As soon as I got into the first couple of paragraphs, I was really intrigued, primarily because this is a topic for me personally with my 7-year-old son that I really focus on his learning and how he kind of gets up to speed with his education. But this was a whole different experience that you talked about, especially with how you worked with children, refugee children, PTSD. Why don't you tell the story of what this article covers and how you came to kind of work on this project?
So this was part of my graduation project I did for a school in the Netherlands, where I first wanted to help refugees settling in the Netherlands. So I researched first a bit on integrating their social aspect, on getting new friends and actually getting some bearings in the new country. Very quickly, I found out that once they're settled and they got a school and a house to live in, they quite easily make friends and settle. Parents, it's a bit different story, but kids usually integrate quite fast. However, there were quite some instances where the kids were really having trouble with their symptoms of PTSD, because of course they have a very tough background. The journey itself is usually very hectic and can be quite traumatizing for them, especially with everything they've seen and them not being able to very control their own journey towards a new country. So that's where I decided to put my new focus on. And as I really wanted to dive in deep, I figured to actually involve those kids early on in the process and reach out to some psychotherapists to help involve in this project as well, as it was quite a fragile target group, to see how I can help cope those kids with their trauma.
How difficult was it to find domain experts to kind of help with that in the design process of helping these children?
Actually, finding those domain expert was way easier than it was to find the target group themselves, the kids. Either people responded very friendly and giving me more information, or they said they couldn't have time but knew other people would. So at the end, I reached out to a friend of a friend who had a psychotherapeutic practice who helps army soldiers, veterans, and he immediately was on board, and also some social workers that I involved early on in the process and kept going on. Usually first starting out by first interview and then asking them if they wanted to proceed, which actually was quite easy process.
And how many people did you eventually reach out to try to get involved with this program, both families and kids?
Quite a lot. I think I called almost the whole Netherlands. And I think 90% said no. Of course, very understandable because it's a very fragile target group. And I didn't want some schoolboy to mess around there, which I completely understand. But even after explaining them that I had domain experts who coached me in dealing with this fragility and sending them briefs beforehand, most schools or refugee centers still said no. And honestly, just after keep calling everyone, there were a few who said yes, but that was honestly only halfway through the project that I actually got hold of a refugee center. So to compensate for that and actually get some kids' input with a different cultural background, I reached out to an international elementary school, and they were very open to work with me. So I got into the class and did a few co-designing sessions with them, getting some more background information on how they deal with their problems, also with different cultures. I started out with the international school, and then slowly, after a lot of goaling, moved toward refugee centers and families.
How did you navigate around GDPR and DPA, which are things that you have to use for consent? How did that factor into the work that you did?
Well, the GDPR only after I did the project got approved by the EU. But before that, it was mostly based on consent from the parents, especially in the schools. Just a teacher consent wasn't enough. So I first created, aside from the brief, a consent form for the parents together with contact information and helping them reach out. So also with audio recordings and video recordings of the sessions, I made sure that I was the only one viewing them and just used them for research purposes.
I know this was a school project, but why did you do this? I mean, what was the thing that kind of drove you to take on such a project like this? Because this seems like it's really involved, especially doing 30 plus interviews, doing workshops, usability tests, co-design sessions. I mean, what was the driver for you?
I was working as a social worker for the Netherlands organization. And then I picked up the stories about how the kids just cope with the problems. And I just couldn't help, especially if they're settling in a new country, they're already having to integrate and having lots of problems with connecting with people. It should make them as easy as possible because they're the future generation. And if the trauma keeps persisting, then they would give their problems over to their children, would just create a ripple effect. So I thought, try to tackle the problem as early on as possible.
So in your article, Lessons Learned on Designing for Kids, you go into a lot of lessons learned that you had between interacting over interviewing and testing, setting the mood. Could you reflect on some of the ones that even to this day, that in this conversation, have stuck with you in terms of things that you carry forward with yourself?
I think the most thing I saw, especially with the more heavily traumatized kids, is that they were quite uneasy in the beginning, especially because they're not used to doing these kinds of workshops. Just to set the stage, get comfortable, first get to know the person you're working with. And I think it helps with adults as well, just regular users for any other app, website, or product. Get to know the person. And what I also found, especially with the younger kids, especially the boys who were quite energetic and having problem with their attention, just provide them with clear tasks. Make sure you don't have any ambiguity. Really set the stage of what you're trying to do here and make sure the roles are clearly defined. You're just here to help them observe, because as long as you give them some room to divert from what your eventual goal is, they'll take it. I had two boys, quite very energetic, very fun kids, but as soon as they didn't really know what was expected of them, they just ran away. I had to chase after them, sweating all over, chasing them across the courtyard of the school and getting them back into the room. So to be a bit more firm with them and really said, okay, this is what we're going to do now. Here's an example. This is what to expect. And then they were actually they put all their energy towards the task and came up with great stuff.
In the article also, you go into turning tasks into games, or how play breeds really creative discussion. Can you go into that a little bit?
What I found first when I started out, I just interviewed the kids like I would normally do with any other adult, quite a dry interview. Didn't get much response. They got quite bored, started talking to each other instead of me. I figured as much, well, they're playing anyway, let's just play together. So I got some Play-Dohs and asked them to make some kind of avatar and really played with them. And while we were playing, I would bring up discussions, talk about what they exactly made, what it meant for them. And I found that having something tangible there, something tangible to talk about, especially with the younger kids, really helped them put their thoughts into line. And actually, quite recently, I did a Lego series play session. You use the Lego stones to force people to think with their hands and direct the discussion at the Lego bricks instead of each other. So it really diffuses the tension there and really makes sure the team is aligned. I thought that was quite interesting how some like childish plaything like Legos could really help, because I did WIT management for a global corporate, could also help them simulate their creativity. And you could see they were actually having fun playing around as well.
The quote I really like from your article is, crayons are excellent replacements for mouths.
Yeah.
Really, the play sets, to your point, sets the stage for a really involved conversation or a more detailed conversation around things that you want to know. You even stated that there were two Syrian girls that only one spoke Dutch, so that the other one was native, but you had to have a translators to help you communicate. How often did that occur? Was just that just a is that particular instance, or where did you find there were other language barriers with refugee children?
This was the biggest one. I had a few instances where the teachers who worked at the refugee centers or at the schools paired me up with kids where at least one could speak Dutch and could help translate for the others, especially with the shy kids. There were these barriers, which was quite difficult at the beginning, but especially also using the Play-Doh or using the Legos really helped divert attention away from those barriers and towards the shared goal that you have. And some assistance was needed, for example, in the case of the two girls, where the one would very happily translate for me, but the hands did the talking in that case, mostly.
You also indicate that background music and giving them small snacks kind of helps set the right mood to kind of set the stage for maybe a creative play and communication. Did you really find that atmosphere was one of those dynamics that really helped foster collaboration and communication between you and everyone you talk to?
Well, yes, I would say so. Especially, of course, when you're interviewing or facilitating those sessions with the kids, you really want to see the reasoning why they're doing something or why they're making something. And just a cold school classroom didn't very much help with making them feel comfortable and having them open up and talk about, especially with such tricky subjects and things they make, open up. And making them feel as comfortable as possible really eased them into just doing what they thought was best for them or what felt great, and then open up more and easily talk more. So I put on some music that was familiar to them. Put them some snacks if they were hungry, or some drink for them, just to set the stage that it's an open conversation instead of a very adult talking to a kid and wanting answers.
And how did the different stages of child development factor into how you engaged the children?
You could see for some kids, their social skills were either they would be very rude because they're like internally angry, or some would just be very shy and scared. And also with the different age groups, I focus mostly between 6 and 11 years old. You could see that mostly motor skills with younger kids would be impaired. But there were also 6-year-olds that were way more mature, I'd say, than an 8-year-old. So I would say if you look at designing for kids, try to focus on the individual and seeing if you divide it by motor skills. So how do they handle physical things or navigating a website versus social skills? How do they talk about people they know, and really cognitive skills like memories, recollection, noticing what information they get, instead of looking at the age group, because that can differ immensely by circumstance the child grew up in. That's at least what I noticed.
And what were some of your learnings on facilitation and co-designing with these kids? Did you have one impression of how to go about it, and then you, through these engagements and through these interactions, do you have a different approach now?
First, I started out with quite some blank sessions and asking them to create something out of nothing. And I noticed that especially with the younger kids or the less cognitive developed kids, they were quite hesitant to do something or give me some feedback. So I noticed that giving them some examples or defining those clear tasks and really creating more structure in those sessions helped create a shared goal or expectations of what was expected of them, and really set the playing field. also with adults, for example, in a design sprint, if people are always talking to each other and it's not really clear who does what, people will just try to swim in deep water without actually going forward. And it was way more obvious with the kids because their energy is quite different from the adults. So if they were good, got bored, they immediately would run off, or if they got bored, they would just talk to other people.
Was that a better indication of how you were capturing their attention and to keep their focus on the task or on something they're playing with versus anything else?
Yeah, I think with kids, it was more obvious when their attention would be lost because they immediately react and draw their stuff, whereas adults maybe more internally have some resistance to what the session is about. So for me, it really helped getting a clear focus and having shared goals for everyone apparent and having clear responsibilities and tasks of what everyone was planned on doing or expected on doing.
How did you define what exactly you wanted to test?
Well, especially with this fragile target group and with the more heavily traumatized kids, I consulted the domain experts, especially the psychotherapists, on how to facilitate a session with these kids without putting too much emphasis on their trauma or on the effects of the trauma. So I really made sure I had, before the session started, I had a clear goal for myself. What is it I want to get from this test? Is it how they're interacting with the product? It was a small bracelet made from an Arduino that measured their stress level. Or is it the mental aspect where it's about the images they see or how they respond to some kind of colors, animals, whatever. So I really made sure that I had it clearly defined if it was a prototype in depth or in the width of the prototype, and made sure I got that defined beforehand and structured the session accordingly.
And this project took you 6 months, correct? From start to finish, from the time that you started all the way to the time it ended. And the end result was something called TAQA, T-A-Q-A, which means inner energy in Arabic. The way you've defined it is that it combines elements from ergotherapy and psychotherapeutic methods, where you were attempting to create a mental safety net for children to turn to. How successful do you feel after going through the entire project?
When I set out for the project, I wanted to create a tangible product, or at least look at the problem which created a necessity for a tangible product. But it turned out I spent, especially with acquiring the target group and involving the domain expert, I ended up spending more time on researching the scope of the project got too immense, especially with looking at what effects PTSD has. So I spent more time on the research and the early prototypes than I actually did on finishing up the proper design. But the psychotherapist I involved were really open to develop it further and really interested in how actually combining those design elements with existing psychotherapeutic and ergotherapeutic practices together, which was something they didn't see yet. So I think combining those different domains together using design was something that wasn't apparent to the domain experts before I started. And now they're very open and more prone to do it.
My understanding is that you were in the process of acquiring funding and partners to realize and scale TAQA. TAQA. Okay. Do you foresee this potentially happening, or is it your hope that somehow this project becomes realized where it could potentially be something that a major organization takes up and runs with?
Well, first of all, I definitely hope so. I think there's still definitely work to be done, especially in the scalability aspect. I really try to look at integrating sensors into existing material like t-shirts or bracelets, etc. But I didn't have enough time to really go in depth there. So I'm really looking for new possibilities in that sense. As far as it goes in psychotherapeutic practices, all the domain experts I talked to really wanted to integrate the product in their practice. Refugee centers I talked to were open to the idea. I do think they still need more a more tangible product for them to be convinced and actually giving it to the kids there.
Well, I'll make sure that when this show eventually is published, that we feature a lot of the links that you include on your website, timdecker.net, about Taka.
Yeah,
Taka. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. If there's anyone who knows someone who's open to working with refugees or just has any knowledge whatsoever, please, yeah, reach out.
Do you still keep in contact with the parents or the children that you interviewed, or was it just considered a project and that the engagement was enough?
I did keep in contact with two families for a while. I lived in another city then, and I did send some presents to the kids. But unfortunately, not anymore. We're not keeping that close contact. I get the occasional picture or a Christmas card, but that's it.
You recently, as of this recording, you joined Kiwi.com. You're moving abroad to Czechia. And
yeah.
You're going to be part of a service design. But what was really interesting to hear when I talked to you offline about it was the process that they used to discover who you were. If you could you explain that, please?
Yeah, of course. Well, that was I got invited to join their design sprint, actually, in Bratislava in this case. So it was a combination of students or professionals anywhere around the globe. They flew them into Bratislava, and everyone got together, and it was about making travel more inclusive. And we did that sprint together and presented the case to the VP of product, and the CEO was there as well. I had a great time with everyone, and then they reached out to a few of those people there that they really wanted to invite them in the team. And a couple of months later, I'm here.
Interesting. So the company itself flew out, not only did they fly out students and professionals, or did they just fly in professionals, but the students were local to the company? How did that work?
No, it was just a mix of mostly the students were from around that area. So either Czechia or Slovakia or Germany, and the professionals were actually a mix of researchers, UX architects, visual designers, which was quite interesting. There was even a veterinarian who wanted to move into UX. So the mix of everything together, and they really did a great job at creating the right teams, making sure every team had the right skill set together to really make something cool.
And how large was the design sprint team? Was it multiple groups?
Yeah. So it was about six groups, I believe, of about four people up and around. And each group had a Kiwi.com employee there to guide them in the process or answer questions when needed.
And how long did the design sprint take? Was it a single day? Was it a couple days?
Yeah, so they structured it in 2 days. So the first day was mostly based on each group was kind of left to its own devices. They had a general agenda, but they really wanted to see how the groups would cope with this time issue and see how they understood design sprint methodology. So usually the first day was spent with first getting the map right, getting the right problem and ideating a bit, and then the next day on prototyping, testing, and further designing.
In 2 days?
In 2 days, yeah. There was, I think, 2 hours of sleep among the groups, and everyone was knackered at the end. No, it was a great time. Everyone was really gave it 150%, and some great stuff came out of it.
And the ideas that were produced from those six or seven individual design sprint teams, they were all for the purposes of kind of informing the company around a particular idea or market that they were interested in exploring or doing?
I think from my point of view, what I mostly saw is it was A, for scouting talent, and B, for scouting opportunities for the company itself, or C, where they could improve. But I talked to the employees there, and it was mostly for scouting new talent to join them at Kiwi.com, seeing as they're scaling really fast and need a bigger design team.
Very interesting.
But I think actually from one of the groups, they integrated recently a feature in the new app.
You have a couple of other things that you're looking forward to, and one of them that you mentioned earlier was your interest in LEGO Serious Play. What do you find really compelling about that process?
I've done a few sessions now, and what I noticed there is I really like the aspect of getting everyone connected to the same problem. It's a very easy, low-fidelity tool to align a whole team, especially of different disciplines who usually don't talk to each other on the same goal, and really focusing the problem on the bricks and not towards each other. So I think it really helps on structuring conversation. And also, I think using your hands to do the talking really stimulates the creativity. Connecting the blocks together really helps make connections that you didn't know where. A lot of analogies are being used when playing with the bricks. And I think that really helps creating solutions to problems that you couldn't have think of if you're just using a whiteboard or a piece of Post-it.
How do you see LEGO Serious Play working into your normal project process? Because you usually have a beginning where you do a bit of research, or you figure out what your requirements are. Then between design and development, you produce something that the business needs to, you know, build out a new feature or a new product. How does LEGO Serious Play kind of factor into that? Is it way towards the beginning? Does it kind of front run everything else? How does it usually fit?
From my experience, it works better if the problem you're trying to solve is still a bit vague and you're not quite sure what the exact problem is or what opportunities to pursue. So I would maybe even put it before doing a design sprint if you want to really test out the waters of a problem space and using it as a tool for team communication instead of actually using it as ideation. Okay. So that could be anywhere in process, but I think it's most useful in the beginning.
And for the Taka wearable project or that we talked about before, you're beyond looking for partners and funding, you're also looking for tech heads and developers that are into Arduino and Raspberry Pi to kind of collaborate on the wearable itself. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So I am mostly looking for people just to spar with, get talking, especially about using those sensors and integrating them into existing materials. And essentially, I'm also looking for developers to actually program the Arduinos.
And if people want to reach out to you about the Taka wearables, or just to get in touch with you in general about your interests, your projects, maybe to collaborate with you, what are some online touch points that they can reach out to and start a discussion?
Yes, so they can go to my website, timdecker.net. You have all my social media links there, or I mean, they're active on LinkedIn or Twitter might be easiest, which is @its_TimDecker.
Are there any other social platforms that you frequent that where people can find you as well?
Well, I'm recently started writing some articles on medium.com and LinkedIn and my website. That's it.
I'm subscribing as soon as I can find it.
Right.
If your articles are anywhere near the quality of the research project, I'd be interested to kind of follow you and see what kind of work you do.
Oh, thank you. Great to hear.
And if you were to ask the podcast audience any particular question, what question would you want to ask them?
Well, if there's anyone already working with refugee kids or applying Serious Play on a day-to-day basis, I'd love to just have a chat about it and hear other experiences from other people.
Great. So, Tim, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I had a great time talking with you about your Taka wearable project. I hope I see more of it in the future.
Yeah, you too, Robert. Thanks for letting me be on this podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the DAO's Design Sprints podcast. If you have a question or a comment, email me direct at robert@daosdesignsprints.com. You could also find me hanging out on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and even Snapchat. You can check out all of Tim's projects and links in the show notes, as well as a couple of additional ones for some new newsletters that we've started up for the Global Virtual Design Sprint and the Referral Network. If you're interested in either one of those, sign up. That's it for now. We'll see you next time.